Gary Savage, founder of Smart Money Tracker Premium. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to The Competent Investor.
Thanks for the invitation, Tom.
Gary, as I'm looking at the markets here, we seem to be seeing a rotation kind of out of crypto, and yet gold is holding quite stable. How do you see the bull market cycle in gold and silver, where we currently are in this bull market? And I want to ask you this to get a sense of, let's say, this contrast that we're seeing between these two asset classes. Do you think that this is maybe one of the catalysts, let's say, to drive more people into the precious metal space?
So I think each asset is in a different phase of its larger multi-year cycle. I'm pretty sure Bitcoin has completed the top of its four-year cycle. So now it's in the declining phase of that four-year cycle. And Bitcoin is pretty volatile. It can shave off 70 or 80% during this four-year cycle decline. We're about 3 years in, so I would expect it's going to take about a year to get to that bottom. So I think crypto investors just need to be patient. There's going to be counter-trend rallies, but it's hard to pick, you know, exactly when one of those is going to start and where the top's going to be. You kind of get hopeful if, you know, when you get a rally, you know, if you're a big crypto bull, you get one of these violent bear market rallies and you start to think, well, that's the bottom. And so then you buy, but you're buying kind of late in a counter-turn rally, and then it rolls over and it goes down, makes a lower low, and you take a big loss. So I think crypto investors are going to have to just be patient for about a year. Mm-hmm. Gold, on the other hand, is still in the advancing phase of its eight-year cycle. And I do think we're entering the parabolic, quote-unquote, bubble phase of this bull market. And now I'm a little different than most analysts. Most people want to contend that this is the beginning of the bull market. I don't see it that way. I think the bull market started, I mean, take your pick, either 1999 or 2001, gold double bottomed at $250. And then we had the first phase of the gold bull, went from $250 to a little over $1,900 in 2011. Mm-hmm. And we had a cyclical bear market that lasted 4 years, bottomed in the fall of 2015. And that's when we started the second phase of the secular bull market. And so we've been in this second phase of this bull market. We're not at the beginning of this. We're 10 years into this bull phase. And if you look at a long-term chart, which I can pull up if you want me to, but if you look at a long-term chart, you can see that the character of the market has completely changed. We're starting to go vertical. And that's generally what happens when you get into that final bubble phase. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a lot of potential. There's huge potential right now, because the biggest gains in a bull market always come at the very beginning and then again at the very end of a bull market. So I think we're moving into the last year and a half, 2 years of the bull market. You can make some really big gains really quickly during this phase, but I think you're kidding yourself if you think that gold has another 10 or 15 years in this bull market. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm.
Maybe, Gary, while you pull up that chart, I wanted to get your thoughts on when we look at these price targets. You just mentioned that $1,900 level that was reached in 2011. Do you try to adjust for inflation what these, let's say, ultimate targets end up being, these highs in that market, in the gold market?
The way I would try and pick a top in gold would be looking at two ratios, the gold-silver ratio and the Dow-gold ratio. Mm-hmm. I think the gold-silver ratio is going to go to somewhere between 20 to 1 to maybe 30 to 1. I lost my screen here. Hold on 1 second. There we go. Okay. I think at the final top, the Silver plays catch up in the last year, 6, 8 months. Silver will go crazy to the upside. It won't be unusual at all for silver to do 200 or 300% in that last year. So the Dow gold ratio will crash, or the gold silver ratio will crash as we get into those final months of the bull market. So that's one thing to look for when you're trying to pick a top is a gold silver ratio of 20 to 1 or somewhere between 20 to 1 and 30 to 1. I think, you're not going to be able to pick the exact top, but you know, once you get to 30 to 1, you've probably made an insane amount of money. Maybe it's time to control greed and say good enough, because you don't want to get, you know, these things that go straight up, they also go straight down, and silver is notorious for that. Mm-hmm. You miss that top by one day and you can lose 20 or 30% off of that top. So you, pretty important you don't get caught at the top in silver. And then the Dow gold ratio, I'm going to say maybe we get to 3 to 1, 1 ounce of gold to 1 share of the Dow, or 3 ounces of gold to 1 share of the Dow might be another ratio you want to look at. Other than that, I don't know of any way to pick a top, you know, because things just get extreme when you get in these bubble phases. You could look at the stretch above the 200-day moving average, and it could just look insanely stretched, and you might still have another 100% to go. You know? So basically, that's what I'm going to look for, is I'm going to watch those two ratios. When they start to get down to those levels, that's probably where I'm going to start to be. Time to control greed and sell my gold and silver, and then it's going to be time to find something else that's undervalued. And most importantly, do not get caught in the narrative. It's always the same. It was the same at the 1980 top. Oh, the dollar is going to collapse. The debt is, there's no way to ever pay the debt. We're going to have to print and inflate forever. And, the people that bought into that narrative that got caught at the top, it'll be the same. You'll hear the same narrative at the top for reasons why this can never go down. And I hear those same arguments at intermediate tops as well. For, just recently, I kept trying to tell people, I think you need to control greed. And, we've gone a long ways and pretty much reached the targets that I was kind of expecting. And people were telling me, oh, this time is different. And there's silver shortages, and that's why price can't go down. And well, fundamentals don't drive corrections. Sentiment does. You run out of buyers, and then big money starts to take profits, and then you get a correction. So it's not a change in the fundamentals that caused these corrections. It's a change in sentiment, and it's a profit-taking event. And eventually, once the profit-taking event has run its course and you run out of sellers, then the fundamentals come back, and then you make another leg higher. But you have to be careful not to buy into the narratives at these tops. So that's why I would look at those ratios as a sign of when you need to get out of this market and go find something that's undervalued, as opposed to, there's never going to be a narrative, oh, that this is the top. At tops have to catch the most amount of people. And that's what the narratives do. The market constructs this narrative for why this is happening. And, I saw kind of the same thing with oil back in 2008. And I'm looking at it like, we got tankers sitting in the Gulf with no place to unload their oil, but people are telling me that we're running out of oil. It made a lot of sense to me. And of course, then that was the top in the market, and the oil market crashed. Mm-hmm. So beware of narratives. Watch those ratios. When they get extreme, it's time to sell your gold and silver. All bull markets end, they all get overvalued. And when they do, smart money starts to sell, and that the smart money starts looking for something else that's undervalued.
Gary, you're very well known as a technical trader, looking at these fundamentals, trying to, let's say, remove the emotion from these markets and how they're actually performing. So inherent in that, you just mentioned this idea that you need to be controlling greed. Are there other ways other than just, purely being a technical chartist that you find valuable in controlling that greed and understanding, when to take some profits or when to start buying something that other people are hating?
Well, cycles help a little bit, although they don't work real good during a parabolic phase. The corrections, as we've seen the last was it three, four corrections, I think, have not been the typical ABC move in the metals that we're used to. They've especially in gold, they've turned into these sideways churns, and it's looking like the one that we're in right now is also going to be a sideways churn. But generally speaking, these rallies, they'll last about 2.5, 3 months. And once you get that mature, then sentiment starts to get extreme. The narrative becomes a bit really loud, and you'll have the if I post something on X that's saying, hey, maybe it's time to take some profits, and I'll just get tons of people telling me, and I'm an idiot that price can never go down, and then that's a sign of extreme sentiment, and a sign that maybe not in your physical gold. I don't try and dodge corrections in my physical gold, but we're playing leverage now because I believe we're in that final phase where you make a lot of money. So I want to compound that with leverage, but I do not want to ride leverage trades down into intermediate cycle lows. I don't mind riding my physical gold and silver down into an intermediate cycle low. That doesn't bother me at all. But if you ride leverage, heavy leverage down into an intermediate cycle low, you'll watch your portfolio lose 80 or 90%. It'll probably come back if you buy enough time. It'll come back and you'll make 200 or 300% on that trade. But most people don't have the emotional stability to watch their portfolio lose 90% and keep sticking with the trade. They'll panic sell, afraid that they're going to lose everything. So, that's kind of the way we're playing it right now. We don't touch our physical gold and silver. And then when we get an intermediate cycle bottom, or it looks like we're getting close to the end of one of these sideways churns, then we'll get into leverage and then play that next intermediate rally.
So when you do see that top, Gary, that eventual, 30-to-1 gold to silver ratio, or if it gets down to below that, or that 3-to-1 Dow to gold ratio, do you foresee also selling your physical gold and silver at that point on top of your leveraged bets that you had?
Absolutely. When those ratios get to that level, it means that the gold and silver are insanely overvalued. And if the Dow gold ratio gets down to 3 to 1, then it means stocks are insanely undervalued. And at that point, I don't want to be in gold and silver anymore. I mean, we saw what happened when the last secular bull market ended in 1980. It took, what, 20, 30 some years to recover. I don't have 30 years. So, I'm not going to ride out a 30-year secular bear market. So yeah, when metals get really overvalued, I will sell all of my metals and I'll go looking for something that's undervalued and put my money there.
So, Gary, considering that you're solely focused on metals right now, does that include miners or anything like that, or is it physical gold and silver that underpins, let's say, as the ballast in your portfolio, and then leveraged bets alongside on just the metals?
So we can, I give subscribers the option if they want to. Basically, we play three ETFs. We play GLD, SLV, and GDX. Basically, because those three have the most liquidity in their option chains. You can play all three, but right now I am more focused on silver SLV than I am the others. Simply because I think silver has a lot of catching up to do. The gold silver ratio is like, I haven't checked today, but I think it's like maybe 78 to 1. And if it's going to go to, 30 to 1 or 20 to 1, silver's got a lot of catching up to do. The spreads are pretty tight on the SLV options. I think miners will do pretty good too, but they've already done, they've done a lot of catching up. So I think from here to the end of the bull market, I think SLV will outperform GDX. Now I'm sure there's going to be some junior miner somewhere that will outperform silver, SLV, even options on SLV, but I don't trade individual stocks, and you know, and I don't have a crystal ball. I wouldn't be able to pick which junior is going to do that. And very often it has nothing to do with fundamentals. It just happened. It's just, you know, the fad. Whereas all the crowd, you know, the crowd starts to see some buying over here. And so the crowd jumps in, and it may have nothing at all to do with the fundamentals. It just means the crowd has kind of picked up on this particular stock. So I don't know how to judge where the crowd's going to drift to. So I don't trade individual stocks at all. I just trade the ETF. So if we do trade miners, it would be in GDX or GDXJ. But I'm kind of, like I said, mostly focused on SLV right now, probably from now until the top of the bull market, just because I think it has a lot of catching up to do, certainly against gold and against miners in general as well. So I think silver is the place to be.
And just to reiterate that, you're choosing to trade in that ETF because of the liquidity, not because, you know, it's replacing or playing the role of physical for you.
Yeah, no. I mean, you could, in theory, if you wanted to treat SLV or PSLV like physical, buy and hold, but that's easier said than done. You know, most traders that say that that's what they're going to do, you know, they're just fooling themselves. If you get into a, well, I mean, the recent correction in silver was, I think it was about 15%. You know, if you're in SLV and it looks to you like we're going to have a C wave and go lower, you are very tempted to click that mouse. And if you'd click that mouse, you'd have got out right at the bottom, because now it doesn't look like it's going to have a C wave down. It looks like it's going to turn sideways. And so you won't make that mistake with physical. Nobody's going to be calling the bullion dealers trying to sell their physical and then carting that down to the bullion dealer to deliver. You know, if you don't think the bull market's over, which I think still has a long way to go, you're just not worried about your physical. So you don't over trade that. You just buy and hold. Whereas, you know, if you got SLV in your portfolio, you're probably going to overtrade and make mistakes. But, you know, if you got the mental fortitude to just buy it and forget about it, maybe you get a second trading account that you just don't even look at it. And that would be ideal, because it would be so much easier to get rid of it than to take your physical down to the bullion dealer. But, you know, I don't trust myself not to overtrade. So the vast majority of my capital is in physical gold and silver. And I trade a smaller part in a trading portfolio that we use leverage in.
Well, the reason I ask that, Gary, is because there's always that nuance in that answer. And, you know, the idea that if you don't hold it, you don't own it, applies.
There is that too. I prefer to have my metals in my possession, or where I can get to them easy, or in a vault that I really trust.
Yeah. Because again, there's always this debate of having it as a physical, you know, portion of your portfolio versus the idea that we're using that very specifically for trading purposes. Gary, I want to get your sense of, you know, you mentioned that we're in a consolidation period right now. What is your kind of time frame for that consolidation period, this kind of sideways churning period?
Well, generally speaking, I think if we weren't moving into that parabolic phase, I would expect the sideways to be even longer than the one in 25, you know, from April to August. That was about a 4-month consolidation. Because we're stretched so far above the 200-day moving average, or especially above the 200-week moving average, I would, you know, if we were in a different phase of the bull market, I would say, wow, we're going to need 8 months to allow that moving average to catch up to price, maybe a year for that to catch up to price. But I don't think we're in that phase of the bull market now. I think we're moving into that final phase. So I don't even think we're going to be 4 months in this. I'm kind of the opinion that we may get another dip right around the FOMC meeting. I think it's on the 10th of December. And that may be where the consolidation ends, right there on right around that FOMC meeting. And then we start the trending phase of the next bull move that could take us to 5,500 or 6,000. And I think these bull moves are going to get more aggressive. The last one was really aggressive. Very few pullbacks, very shallow pullbacks, nothing that dropped. I don't even know that anything closed below the 10-day moving average. If it did, it was only for like a day or two, certainly not long enough to turn the moving average back down. So I think these rallies are going to get more aggressive. The magnitude will get larger. The percentage moves will get larger. They will also get more volatile. So the corrections could be bigger. Like it may not be, it may be become not unusual at all to have a 3-day 10% correction. You know, that's pretty scary when you're in leverage. So you've got to have determination and discipline to stick with the trade. If you were to get a 3-day 10%, 12% pullback in silver, you're going to be very tempted to sell. And if you're in leverage, that's a big loss. But if you hang on, it gets recovered quickly because we're in that acceleration phase where the market's starting to go parabolic. But I that's what I expect in 26. I expect bigger moves. You're going to have bigger profits than we did in 26 or 25. And 25 was, you know, a record year by a long shot for us. I expect 26 is going to be even bigger, but I expect it's going to be more difficult to ride it because I think it's going to get more volatile along the way.
So, Gary, when we to contrast that for this, you know, churning sideways pattern currently, what is your time frame for that? Let's say that ultimate, maybe if we can call it a blow off top in gold and silver.
So the rule basically is when the general public starts to take notice, usually you have about a year to a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And that's about how long it takes for everybody to pile in, you know, everybody to notice that, hey, my neighbor's making a lot of money and I want to make a lot of money. So I'm going to start buying gold and silver too. My theory is that the general public kind of started to take notice once gold cleared 4,000. And we saw that kind of extreme FOMO move there for about a week and a half, where gold, you know, once it cleared 4,000, it went pretty quickly. It went up to 4,400. And that's where I was seeing all the comments, oh, this time is different and gold's not going to correct. And the bell ringing for me, I have a friend of mine that I rock climb with. He knows nothing at all about investing. He called me, I think it was the day before the top. He called me and said, what's the deal with gold? It's like over $4,000. So that was a sign. That was the bell ringing for me that, hey, the public is starting to take notice. Here's a guy that knows nothing at all about investing. And he's, you know, catching on that gold and silver are making big gains. And so I think the public started to take notice here as we went over 4,000. And so I'm going to say we've got a year to a year and a half from when that public started to take notice. So I'm going to say maybe the spring or early summer of 27, we're probably going to get our top.
Okay. Gary, with that, you know, that last aggressive leg up here into, let's say, $50 in silver and $4,000 gold, that was kind of combined with the delivery issues with the LBMA. Do you think that that had this effect of breaking how the short positions in the paper market were functioning and were profitable at that point?
Well, I think to some extent that was the, you know, the quote unquote narrative for silver. You know, we had shortages, and there were shortages in London, but there was a glut here in the US. So what happened? The physical just moved to London. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the top came and the market that everybody said couldn't correct did. You know, I think personally, I think the suppression of the silver market broke when they couldn't hold it below 33. That's where it looked like the line in the sand was for them. And it was, multiple weeks of trying to get above that and getting slammed back down and then popping back up. And kind of the same way that 2000 was the breaking point for the shorts on gold. They tried three or four times to drive that back below 2000 and they couldn't do it. And then you see what happened over the next year and a half. It just, all they did was they got themselves caught in the massive short squeeze that sent gold from 2000 to 4,400. I think that started in silver at $33 when it finally broke that $33 barrier, and then the bullion banks had to start covering those shorts into a short squeeze. If you look at the chart of silver, that's kind of where it starts to go vertical, and it didn't take it very long at all to get from $33 to $54. So I'm on record, I was on record last year. The suppression of the gold market broke when they couldn't hold it below 2000. Mm-hmm. The suppression of the mining market also broke not long after that. And now I'm on record that 33, when they couldn't hold it at 33, the suppression of the silver market broke. So, we'll still get corrections, but they're not corrections that are suppression by the banks. They're just sentiment. Sentiment's just gotten too bullish. Too many people buying into a narrative. And we need to have a profit taking event, but I don't think we're getting any more. How many billions do they have to lose before they learn their lesson? I don't think they're piling on shorts anymore, trying to suppress the markets. I think they've already lost too much money to do that anymore. So I don't think you have to worry about suppression anymore in the markets. Now you just got to have normal corrections from time to time.
To contrast, what we've talked about gold and silver here, Gary, do you see the current environment as not being conducive to a crash event in stocks?
No, I don't think stocks are going to crash. I think they could very well be embarking on a kind of a bubble phase as well. I see a lot of people, calling this the everything bubble, and I just don't see it. In the last two secular bull markets in stocks, they all ran more than 20 years. And at least for the Dow, it was like a 20 to 25 times gain. This bull market, started in 2009. So we're, 16, 17 years. So we're a little short compared to the previous bull markets. And when I think I looked at the S&P was up about nine times. So that seems pretty pretty tepid secular bull market as well. And then also AI is, maybe it's not in the infant stage, but it's like maybe early adolescent. I don't see it being, extremely mature. And until it gets really mature and things get, really stupid, your neighbor buying AI stocks left and right. And so you need to buy AI stocks too. I don't really see bubble conditions yet, but I see a market that could maybe transition into that. And then again, once that starts, you got about a year, year and a half before it's over. But no, I don't see a crash right now.
And you don't think the concentration of wealth within, that Mag 7 or the AI trade is a symptom of the idea that the AI trade is over, let's say, overcrowded?
Well, not at this stage, because the technology is still new. Once the technology matures, when the technology matures, you'll see the leaders will, have all kinds of institutional money there, but you'll also see these little startup companies that'll just be going crazy to the upside because it'll be the narrative. And I don't know that I really see that yet. Like the chat ETF, it's not going crazy parabolic to the upside yet. So yeah, I don't see a potential crash in the stock market. Not yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've created those conditions for a crash. We could certainly have corrections, and we are getting a bit late in the four-year cycle for stocks. If we were to top now, we would have about a year to get to that bottom, and that would be more indicative of more of a stair step down type correction. And we could certainly shave off 20 to 30% But it would be a long drawn out process, not a crash. Now, if stocks continue to rally, like, and we rally to 3.5 or 3.75 years into this 4-year cycle, that's the setup where you could get some kind of a crash where you could shave off 20%, in a very short period of time. Again, I don't think it would be the end of the bull market, though. I think it would recover and come back.
Gary, you mentioned earlier this idea of what the Fed is doing right now, whether they're going to be cutting, whether they're going to be holding. How do you think the data stacks up right now for the Fed to continue to be dovish and cut? Or do you think they have the cover because of lack of data reporting from the shutdown period to hold rates where they are coming in December here?
Well, last time I looked, the futures were pricing in, I think, about a 70 or 80% chance of a cut. If those futures are still pricing that in on December 10th, then the Fed will cut. I think people misunderstand how the Fed operates. They follow the market, they don't lead. So if the market's telling them to cut, they're going to cut. So they're not going to throw a hand grenade into the bond market. If the bond market wants a cut, they're not going to stand pat because there's, there's too much money on the other side of the trade and it would cause havoc. So if the bond market is telling them to cut, they'll cut. If the bond market's telling them to stand pat, they'll stand pat. So they don't really have a decision. They just do what the market tells them to do. And right now the market's telling them to cut. So unless that changes between now and December 10th, they're going to cut.
And of course, we're recording this on November 25th. Gary, what is your inflationary or deflationary outlook going forward here for the next couple of years? It seems like there is a move. We've basically closed the QT window, which kind of opens the door or the need to move back to quantitative easing, as well as, being in the middle of this cutting cycle for rates. So do you think that that ends up driving more inflation?
I do. I think they're probably cutting a little too soon. Same thing happened in the 70s. Now, I will say, Trump's policy of drill, baby, drill is creating a glut of oil, and oil is the inflationary factor. Inflation is what causes recessions generally, unless we just do something stupid like closing down the global economy for a virus. Hopefully we won't do that again. But what causes a recession is when the price of energy spikes 100% or more in a short period of time, like a year or less. That's such a shock to the economy. It's a shock to the middle class and the lower class. All of a sudden they have no discretionary income anymore. Everything they make is going into the gas tank and putting food on the table. And everything has an energy component to it. So if the price of energy skyrockets quickly, the price of everything starts to go up. And the policies of this administration are helping to keep energy prices suppressed because there's just a lot of oil. Now, if the dollar were to collapse quickly, that would probably cause oil to move up, along with gold. But I think we have inflationary factors in play. They're just not in play in that one critical commodity that causes trouble, right? We're getting inflation in the housing market. We're getting inflation in the stock market. We're getting inflation in gold and silver, just not getting it in energy. And so right now, for the most part, the inflation is the quote unquote good type inflation that people like it when their house price goes up. They feel richer. They like it when their 401ks are going up. They feel richer. If you own gold and silver, you like it because those are going up. It's when energy goes up, then the cost of food and everything else goes up along with it. That's when you have trouble. But this current administration has the right policy to try and keep the inflation in the sectors where we want it and keep it out of that sector where we don't want it. How long
Well,
that'll last,
obviously,
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
How long that'll last, I don't know.
Yeah, obviously energy is a major component to the price of food, fuel, everything that we need to use.
Everything has a transportation component or just a production component. Plastics that are made with oil, and so everything has an energy component to it.
But to contrast that, Gary, I saw a report this morning saying that auto delinquencies are at their highest levels ever. There's mortgage delinquencies are nearing all-time highs. You mentioned that we're getting inflation in housing, but a lot of the reports that I've seen that are saying that housing prices are starting to come down and to slide. So, when we look at, let's say, the average consumer having that much stress and that little disposable capital to be able to spend on these necessities, how do you kind of square that with this ability for the consumer to be able to absorb any more inflation?
So, I'm not sure I believe those numbers for two reasons. The stock market's not rolling over. You can't have a recession if the stock market's going up. And all administrations know that by now. So they do QE to keep the stock markets pumped up. As long as the stock market continues to go up, you can't have a recession. And I'm here in Vegas, and it's kind of a canary in a coal mine. If this is a discretionary income town. If people have money to go throw it away in Vegas, then there's not a recession. Now, I will say that the casinos on the Strip have slowed down dramatically, but I don't think that's because so much because the economy is taking a turn down. I think it's because the casinos on the Strip have got it into their heads that they want to just appeal to the whales, and so they've overpriced everything. You go to McDonald's or something in one of the casinos, and it'll cost you $40 for a Happy Meal and whatever. So they priced themselves out of the middle class market. They're chasing those people away, and they just want to appeal to the whales that don't care what anything costs. So the Strip is suffering a slowdown. But when I go to the local casinos, maybe that aren't gouging like that, although I will say that even the table limits at the local casinos, they've jacked those up too high, in my opinion. But also the restaurants, we will go to the restaurants at least once a week. They're still full. If we were going to have a recession, people aren't going to be throwing their money away at a restaurant to cook at home. So I'm not seeing any signs of a recession yet. So unless the price of oil really starts to spike, I think you're going to see recovery in those sectors where you're talking about some delinquencies and stuff.
But Gary, is it possible that we're just seeing a real bifurcation, let's say, between Wall Street and Main Street, where the stock market is still chugging along, still making new highs because of the amount of liquidity and the amount of momentum that is inherent in how these markets
I'm
can
going
be
to say that we could just be in a slowdown.
capitalized.
We've had slowdowns before, but they didn't materialize into a recession like people were expecting. And that could be what's happening. We're just having a slowdown, but it doesn't mean it has to turn into a recession yet. So, that's completely possible as well. And maybe that's why the stock market keeps going up too, is it sees a slowdown, but it doesn't see a recession, so it's not selling off.
So Gary, I think an underlying point of what we just talked about is this idea that it's maybe difficult to find data that we find to be very credible. Have you kind of maybe perfected a process, or what data do you look at that you think is far more useful to the way that you analyze the world?
So I'm not a big data guy. I'm not a fundamental type trader. I just mostly just technicals. Right now, I'm just focusing on gold and silver. But for me, my data just comes from going to the restaurants. If they're full, figure the economy is doing pretty good. If Costco is full for Christmas, I figure we're doing good. Other than that, I don't trust government data at all. So I think it's all massaged. So that's the extent of my data following.
Well, that's fair, Gary. The idea, kind of going back to that earlier point about removing emotion and controlling greed. If you're let's say too mired in all these data points, I think that can exactly to your point, kind of distort your view of what's going on, and to stick to the fundamentals and those repeatable cycles that, we as humans continue to replay over and over, I think is
And
more interesting.
fundamentals they can be a terrible timing mechanism. So maybe the fundamentals are correct. What was it like the yield curve inverted, and then when it uninverts, you're going to have a recession. Well, it uninverted was like 2 years ago, so that's terrible timing. But I guess that uninversion has predicted every recession, with like 100% accuracy, but maybe it's predicting a recession, but it's been 2 years now, so that it's just a worthless timing tool. So I don't know that those fundamentals, quote unquote fundamentals, are necessarily any good at predicting a timing on these things. So maybe we got another year before the recession starts in earnest. I don't know.
Well, Gary, I appreciate you walking us through all of these ideas and how you what data you're paying attention to, and what is worth paying attention
The
to. I think
restaurant
that
data.
yeah, I think that helps simplify life quite a bit. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing at all. Is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about before we wrap up here?
So I have reopened the S&T for yearly subscriptions. I always put this disclaimer out there. I'm only focused on the metals because we have collapsed the suppression in the entire metal sector, in my opinion. And it looks to me like we're entering the last phase of the bull market where you make a lot of gains quickly. I'm not doing monthly subscriptions. I'm not interested in these people that join, and if they don't make money the first week, then they get frustrated and quit. Give me a year, you're going to make a lot of money, because I don't think the bull market's over yet. I don't think the 8 year cycle's topped yet. We're playing these intermediate cycles with leverage right now. If you want to join and get on board, now's a good time to do it. You want to do it before the next trending move starts, so you can get positioned before it starts. You don't want to wait and let a month of the move go by until your emotions tell you, oh, okay, now I feel good about it. Now I'm gonna, get in. Well, you've let a month of the rally go by. So, if you want to join, now's the time to join while we're still kind of stuck in this sideways churn, because this is the period where you want to start getting positioned for that next run up. And
Excellent.
you can follow me on the best place to follow me is on X, and my it's Gary Savage one, small g, Gary Savage and the number one.
And of course, smartmoneytrackerpremium.com.
Yeah, you can Google Smart Money Tracker and find me that way. You can find the premium site.
Perfect. Gary, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Tom.